Hey Dhamma friends, so we are discussing Khagga Visana Sutta as a theme for this mindfulness for young adults session, and we started that sutta on last week, and we covered the first verse, and basically all these verses are uttered by the Buddha and as a request of Ananda, Venerable Ananda. That is how the commentary explains, but there are different views as well. But anyway, Buddha spoken these many verses explaining about the secluded life of a monastic, or especially here about the Paccheka Buddhas. You know that there are 3 levels of attainment, basically. So the supreme attainment, that is the self-enlightened Buddha, Samma Sambuddha, and then this Paccheka Buddha, and he also self-enlightened, but he is unable to explain the Dhamma in detail, so that the others can't have the full understanding about the attaining Nibbana. And the third level is the Sravakas, or the disciples of the fully enlightened Samma Sambuddha, and they have various capacities. Some have the capacity to explain others the Dhamma, what they have realized, and some may not have to the same level. So likewise, variations are there. Now in this Khagga Visana Sutta, the theme is that these various Paccheka Buddhas are spending a secluded life, and they are what is the main reason for their attainment. So this is how they are explained one after the other, and each verse actually have a beautiful story behind it, and all these stories are explained in the commentary. And main canon, that is the Suttanipata, only has the verse, and the explanation is given in the commentary. Now we have discussed the first verse last time, and so therefore I directly go to the second verse. So second verse starts like this: Samagga janas sansagga jatasya bhavanti sneha sneham veyang Dukkhamidam pahoti. Adinavang snehajang pekkamano eko chare khagga visana kappo. So this is a beautiful incident happened long time ago, and this Paccheka Buddha also has born during the Buddha Kassapa. You know that before our Buddha, the Gautama Buddha, there was few more Buddhas in this Bhadrakappa. So one is the Mahakassapa, the Kassapa Buddha. So there is, during this Blessed One Kassapa, this particular Paccheka Buddha has born as a layman, and then he also entered the Sasana, and there he has spent a lot of time and maintaining ascetic practices. It is mentioned about 20,000 years he has spent developing these ascetic practices, and he was able to attain first jhana, and using which he has got the fortune to reappear in the Brahma realm. So he spent there a long time, and after being there for a long time, and again now he has born to the king Varanasi, king of the Varanasi, and now he is a little prince. But there is a big difference in this little prince, that he doesn't like women. So this is a beautiful story, so you can imagine what has happened. So this little king doesn't like women. Now therefore, even if he is crying, and if he has to be fondled, if he have to given even the breastfeeding, so the males have to come. So what they did was, Actually, they disguised as males and they come and they feed. Even the that is how they have fed this little prince. And he is not willing to be with the women. Rather, he likes to be with men. And therefore, he doesn't like the smell of the women. So, therefore, it is he is being called as Anithyagandha Kumara. Or Anithyagandha, the prince called Anithyagandha. Non-order of women. So, he doesn't like the order of women. So, therefore, he is called Anithyagandha Kumara. So, he likes only the men to take care of him. Anyway, as he is growing, now he was able to again attain first jhana and he is now spending a fairly pleasant life. And when the time comes, so his parents, this king and the queen, thought that this son needs to get married. So they actually asked him, but he doesn't like. He doesn't want to get married. But you know, these parents actually want him to get married because they have the kingdom and the whole resources and all the king, everything is there for him. Therefore, they like their son to get married. So what they did was that they were trying to persuade him for getting married, and they tried to use certain ministers to convince him, but nothing has become fruitful. Then ultimately they ask, if you want to get married, what is the kind of beauty, what is the kind of level of the woman that you need? So then what he did was, he made a kind of a trick that he asked the best sculptures to come, and they were asked to prepare a very beautiful woman's sculpture. So that's a very beautiful woman culture, and you can't find a woman closer to that. It is so beautiful, extremely beautiful. Now, as a challenge, so this prince is telling, so if I am getting this kind of a woman, so beautiful, this kind of a woman, as you can see from this golden statue, if I am getting this kind of a woman, then I am going to marry. So this is the kind of a trick that he is playing. He thought that they may never find such a woman. So then, by the way, the parents, the king and the queen, were thinking that our son is so fortunate, so there should be such a beautiful woman available for him in this area. So they asked several Brahmins to come, and they have handed over the women's statue to them and asked them to find out in visiting various cities and finding out such a beautiful princess for this prince. Now they were going from city to city finding out, and they were unable to find out, but ultimately they have gone to a Madurata, and it's a kind of a area, and they actually have found a girl who is more beautiful than even this statue, golden statue. Actually, what they did was, they have kept this statue closer to a river, and then certain women approached the river to getting bathed and all these things, and they found that their princess have come before them, and then they understood she is not their real princess, rather it's a statue. Then this conversation was heard by those Brahmins, and they asked, where is your princess? And then with their help, so they have gone to the palace, and that king was convinced that our king is looking for this kind of a princess, and so they were able to convince them. Now the Brahmin have sent the message to the king that we have found a princess for our prince. So what are you going to do? Are you going to come here and arrange a wedding here? So do you want us to bring the princess to your kingdom? So they are asking. They were sending a message. then actually the message has gone even to the prince. So he was thinking that they may never find such a woman. But now the prince also got the message that they were able to find such a beautiful girl, beautiful princess. Now actually there is lust arisen in his mind, because he was imagining that this is the kind of prince that I am going to marry, this is the beauty that she is having. So he has some sort of imagined picture in his mind, and now he was able to fulfill it. As a result of that, now he is somewhat burning with lust, and so he put an order, so asked them to carry this princess as much as quickly as possible. Now what happened was, the message has gone back to the Brahmins, and they were asked to carry this princess as quickly as possible. So they actually have given enough wealth and all the things to the parents of that princess, and they were able to convince them, and now they are coming quickly back to the city of that prince, that Varanasi. Now they are arriving. Now since they were ordered to come quickly and for long this distance without stop, they were coming. So it's a long journey. So, and they actually reached the Varanasi, and now they stop. Now it's a long journey and it's quite tiresome. You know, like today they didn't have highways or any of those, so it's a tiresome path. So they have to go through this horse carts. And with all these troubles, now the whole day traveling, and ultimately what happens? So this princess was a very gentle woman, and she was not exposed to this kind of a tiresome job, this long distance traveling. And ultimately what happens, because of the jolting of the vehicle and the tiresome journey, so she become fairly fatigued, and ultimately she couldn't bear it and she actually died. Now the message has gone to the prince that the princess, so beautiful, and he was eagerly looking forward and searching for, has found. But ultimately when she reached the city of Varanasi, she has died. Now it was a shock to the prince, because he was with so much of attachment, and he was thinking about her, and he was imagining about her, and all those fantasizing and all these things are going on in his mind. Now ultimately the whole thing collapsed. All his the expectations, all the love he has, everything collapsed. Now what has happened then? So then actually he understood. Then actually once he was so sorrowful and he was so unhappy, so he was almost like collapsed. And then he was thinking back, what is the reason for this much of sorrow arising in the mind? What is the exact reason? So there he understood, so this close affection, so this too much attachment is the one making this whole sorrow. So if you have extremely close affection towards someone, so if something happens, if that person dies, if you have to get separated, then you can't even bear it. So this prince actually recognized it, he understood it. So now he is recognizing the causes. What are the causes for this much of sorrow, this much of lamentation? What is the real cause? And then he is understanding, okay, there's a kind of an attachment. So in my mind, so this is the cause. So likewise, he is understanding the cause of the suffering. So that is the attachment, that is the desire. So as he is recognizing more and more about this desire, now he is able to let go of the desire. And at the same time, he is able to understand more and more causal reaction, or the causal chain dependence available in this whole situation. So when there is clinging, when there is sort of grasping, So then the sorrow is inevitable. So if something happens, because the situations are very vulnerable, so therefore every time when there is a strong attachment, strong grasping, it causes lamentation, sorrow, despair and all this suffering. And he is searching more. He is actually introverted. He is introspection and he is putting yoniso manasikara and trying to understand more subtle causes. Then he understood, okay, there's a desire in me. Now I have a kind of a desire for this princess. So I have imagined her beauty and there's a desire. So he understood the desire. So why this desire happens? So it is because of the feeling. So when I am thinking about her, there's a very pleasant feeling arising in me. So this is the feeling. So how the feelings arising? That is because of the contact. So my mind get engaged with various fantasies, various imagined, images and situations. And that actually causes a lot of happiness. So this happiness, this pleasure, this pleasurable feelings are the cause for that craving, attachment, desire. So he is further and further drilling down and recognizing the subtle causes. Then he understood, okay, this feeling happens because of the contact. So the mind get contact with all these imaginations, all these proliferations, all these mental images. So that is where the contact happens. So there is the mind. This is the faculty. This is a kind of a reflection available in the mind. So this is the faculty level that it is working. So there are six faculties. Mind, body, eye, ear, nose, tongue, like that. So he is carefully scrutinizing, carefully observing, and he is carefully recognizing each and every link of this dependent arising. So likewise, he is going little by little to the backward and he is understanding what are the earlier causes for these 5-6 senses. So then he is recognizing, okay, there's a kind of an imagined situation. There is a kind of a reflection going on in the mind. So mind is occupied with various, mental images. Mind is occupied with various name and form. So in today's terms, if we are explaining, so the consciousness and name and form have kind of an interrelationship. So this intelligent prince now is understanding all these causes. As he is moving forward, so he understood there is an ignorance. So ignorance is causing a lot of fabrications, a lot of formations. It is causing the consciousness and name and form to come into contact, to operate in a cordial manner, interrelationship. And it is causing the faculties to get activated. And it causes the contact. Contact causes feelings. And if those feelings are quite pleasurable, there is a desire for those feelings, craving for those feelings. And once it is growing, then there's the grasping. And when the grasping is there, so there is a mind-made fantasy, mind-made conceptualized world. So that world get collapsed. So that causes suffering. So likewise, he is reflecting on this paticca samuppada, this dependent arising, forward and backward, ascending order and the descending order. So with this kind of a practice, now he was able to attain Paccheka Buddha. He has become a Paccheka Buddha. Now, so once he has become the Paccheka Buddha, and the other people didn't know that now he has become a Paccheka Buddha, now they are asking him to not to get worried because of the departure of this princess. So they are asking him not to get worried. And now he is telling that I am not worried. I am now have completely eradicated the causes of being worried. So, and I have become a Paccheka Buddha. And he is now uttering this verse to the audience. Sansagga jatasya bhavanti sneha. So when there is a bond, when there is a close affection, and when there's a close affection, there's a kind of a bond is there. So when you have sort of an affection, there is a bonding. And sneha vyan dukkha midang pahoti. So that affection can bring suffering. And adinavam snehajam pekkamano. And when one understands the danger there, so danger of this affection. So once he understood that, so now he is trying to be alone without allowing your mind, allowing his mind to get for that kind of a suffering. So this is the kind of a theme of this story this Paccheka Buddha is telling. So the close affection, if one is having, so that can lead to immense amount of suffering. So you know, it is not a secret that all of us may have a lot of close relationships, intimate relationships, and we may have love affairs, and many things are there. So various situations were there. So if there's a kind of a breakout happens, if there is any relationship breaking out happens, so you have extreme suffering. Your heart start to burn. So you feel your whole world has collapsed, and you get utterly disappointed. And the other party might have neglected you. That also can make you really suffer. And probably neglecting you, he or she has gone with someone else. So that also can cause a lot of suffering. And on the other hand, he or she might encounter kind of a disease. So unexpected disease. So that might have caused kind of a bad situation. He or she might have quickly passed away, met with an accident. So likewise, when we have close affection with the person, so there is a kind of a danger there, because in any kind of a situation, the other party, the other person can met with maybe an accident or kind of a change of his mind. So likewise, many issues are there. So therefore, this Paccheka Buddha is seeing that danger. So he recognized that danger. So therefore he is mentioning adinavam snehajam pekkamano. So by recognizing those danger, so he is now trying to be alone without going for any kind of intimate relationship, without going to have a close affection with anyone. He is trying to be independent. He is trying to be alone. So this is the theme that comes under this verse. And under this, actually, there are several levels of affection, and the close companionship is explained in the commentary. The first one is the dasana, where how a bonding happens. Say you are seeing a particular person again and again. Suppose you are going to work and there's a beautiful girl, maybe a handsome boy, and you start to have kind of a affection because of this scene. Again and again you see that particular person. She is beautiful, she is pretty, and she is behaving very pleasant. So you get a kind of a click in your mind. Similarly, the other side also can happen. So likewise, this scene can cause this kind of an affection, this kind of a bond. So you get kind of a bond in the mind. So you get a kind of an attachment in the mind. So once you come back home, so you start to think about that person. So I have seen that girl while I'm walking, while I'm traveling, okay, while I'm working. So likewise, you start to generate various thoughts in your mind. Now you are going to various fantasies, going to proliferation. And the other side is the savana, that you have heard someone. Maybe someone is singing, someone is talking. Okay, someone has given you an unexpected call. The other party on the other side is talking very pleasant. So your mind get attached to that, or your mind get attracted to that. Because Buddha has mentioned, for men, this women's sight, sounds, and their behavior, and their appearance, and that is the best form that the man's mind get attracted. Similarly, for women, The sights, sounds, smells, the behavior of men are the main attraction. So this is happening, both happens to both sides. So here, therefore, Buddha mentioned, so either through the sights, this attraction can happen. Either through the sounds, this attraction can happen. And again, through the bodily relationship, say you are touching, kissing, or all these relationships are going, intimate relationships are going on, so the affection is happening, the bonding happens, a close attachment going to happen. And then maybe having a conversation, so you are having a friendly conversation. At the beginning, probably you may start a kind of an official talk, discussing a particular matter, or okay, maybe starting a typical topic of the country, a kind of a situation in the whole world. Now you are sharing your thoughts. Now you find kind of attractive points the other party is talking. So you get attracted to that. And then the conversation becomes longer and longer. And you like to have conversation with that particular person. So you are inviting him or her to have another conversation. So let's meet on the other day. So next day at this particular time, let's have a little chat. So this is how we start, because we like that conversation. It's a kind of an attractive conversation is there. So we give enough reasons to justify this conversation. So we are starting this conversation. Now it is going on and on. So once come back home also, you may be giving a call, and again you are continuing, and you like this conversation. So this conversation also causes this affection, also causes this bonding, close attachment. And probably you may even share certain resources. Say you didn't have your, say, laptop, so you borrow someone else's laptop. So the person who lend you the laptop may be a beautiful girl, maybe a handsome boy. So he feel quite generous. So you get attracted to this. So you start to appreciate his or her generosity. You start to appreciate his demeanor. And his behavior, his politeness, his manners. So likewise, various points are there. So how we get involved, how we get attracted, how we develop this kind of a relationship, and how we start this kind of a close, intimate relationship. So these are actually mentioned and explained. And this is how our mind get hooked up. Our mind get attracted. Our mind develops sort of bonds between the other parties, with their opposite sex. So this actually leads to attachment. When the attachment is there, there's a kind of a strong relationship, strong bondage in the mind. So in case, now the other person met with an accident, or met with a kind of a sudden change, completely changed the mind, or he or she has completely changed the mind and given word to someone else. So what happened to you? So you may face kind of booted. You may feel sort of collapsed. And you feel that your whole world has destroyed. And you may even feel like committing suicide. But here, fortunately, this person, this Paccheka Buddha, was quite fortunate person. He has his previous good karma, and he has his good understanding. So rather than he committing suicide or he is continuing to become sorrowful, what he understood, he actually reflected back. So when suffering is there, Buddha mentioned there are two sides, two outcomes. One outcome is become crazy. That you understand, okay, the other party has met with an accident. So you become completely sorrow, lamentation, and ultimately one can even become crazy. The other side is the search, investigation. So this is what this person has done. So when the sorrow is arising in the mind, so he investigated what is the exact reason for this sorrow. He is now finding out various causes. So this is the wise approach. So all these breakages, all these booting, all these separations, those are actually inevitable in our lives. They may happen at many different times. So when such things happen, rather than become bewildered by that, rather than become overwhelmed by that, so if we are able to recognize this suffering, if we are able to recognize our own, say, sorrow, lamentation, and now recognizing the causes for that suffering. So what is the exact cause? And what are the other supporting causes? Then we are doing wise reflection, yoniso manasikara. So this is what the method, this Pacheka Buddha has done. So this the bad fortune, actually he was able to turn to the benefit of his spiritual side. So he has turned this completely bad accident, misfortunate accident, unfortunate accident to the benefit of his spiritual side. So rather than he committing suicide, instead he tried why this sorrow has happened in this mind. It's a wise reflection. So with that he was able to reflect the this causal reaction, dependency, and as a result he was able to practice vipassana, and then he was able to completely uproot all the desires, craving available in the mind. So when the complete craving is eradicated, uprooted, so he was able to attain the craving-free state of mind, tanha-kaya, that is the nibbana. So this is how he has attained the Pacheka Buddhahood, and so he is explaining his way of attainment. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Tenwan
Sannai.
We have 5 questions today.
Yeah. So we can't see your face. Let me see your face. Ah, yeah. Okay.
The first question is a general question.
Yeah.
It has a medical term, so I hope I pronounce it properly. Dear Venerable Bhante, would you please be able to elaborate on epistemological suicide?
So today I also mentioned about the suicide. Now you are asking epistemological suicide. Interesting. So actually our Lobusayanase used to say this quite often. So this epistemological suicide. So actually there are different ways that we can explain this. So you know, what we have is not a real self. So what we really have is a mind-made self. So first of all, if we have this understanding, then it is easy. So it is not a real substantial self that we all have. Rather, what we have is a mind-made self. Because of our ignorance, we are making a self. Then and there, we are making a self. So this is a very interesting and very deep understanding of the vipassana. So eye making and mind making happens then and there. Say for example, you did a kind of a marvelous job. So everybody started to praise you, everybody applaud, and so you have become the star at that time. Now suppose the event has finished and now you are coming back home. So while at home, so various thoughts are coming, thinking about that incident. So how you did that, how the others have applauded, how the others have praised. So likewise, now many thoughts are coming, making a self. Now you are making a self. Because others have made you a good person or kind of an appreciating person. And star, whatever it is. So likewise, what happens is this whole situation helps to make a person, helps to make an individual, helps to make a self. So this is how the second thought or this proliferation, thinking, is helping to make a self. Or on the other hand, we may even think about our belongings. So I have this, I have that. So these are my belongings. I have this much of money in my bank account. this is my mother, this is my father, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my job. So I am thinking about all these belongings. So they are, those are also helpings to make a self. So likewise, we are continuously making a self. So this is how we actually have this self-view. So through vipassana, what we do is, after having fair amount of mindfulness and you have a lot of understanding about the nature of the phenomena, where you recognize through your own direct knowledge that things are impermanent, they are quite transient, they're constantly subject to change, and there is nothing substantial, there is no inner core, everything is basically empty. So you have this understanding, the vipassana knowledges are there with you. And whenever that self-making happens in the mind, there you are trying to disclaim, rather than promoting that self-view, rather than promoting that self-appropriation, so you do some sort of disclaiming. So this is called epistemological suicide, where you have very good understanding, intellectual understanding is also there, that you know that there is no any substantial self, a person, individual. Rather, these thoughts are trying to construct a self through their those kind of ignorant thinking. And you are now trying to discard that thinking. You are trying to disregard that thinking. You understand the futile nature of that thinking. So this is in a way, we are trying to, in a way we can say it's a kind of a committing suicide, but actually it's not exactly like that, because there is no person to get commit suicide. Now if there is a substantial self to get annihilated, we can say it is a kind of a committing suicide, kind of a self-annihilation. But if there is no real self, if it is the what we have is a constructed self, what we have is a mind-made self, then there is no person to get committed suicide. But anyway, from an outside point of view, one can interpret that we are doing some sort of epistemological suicide. But anyway, Buddha didn't mention like that. What Buddha has mentioned is that eye-making and mind-making has to be recognized. So you are recognizing then and there how the mind is trying to trick us to create a self, to construct a self, to fabricate a self. So you recognize this fabrication, you recognize this construction, and you understand its futile nature, and then you simply become mindful and simply disclaim it. So as you do that, what happens is the frequency of this eye-making and mind-making become less and less. Say for example, when you are not developing mindfulness, when you are not developing vipassana, so quite often you may do this eye-making and mind-making. Again and again, so each and every aspect you are making a self. You have a lot of conceit, you are quite proud, and you are quite possessive. So likewise, there's a huge self, mind-made self is there. But as you develop vipassana and you have good knowledge about the whole thing, and when you know things as they truly are, so this mind-made self start to become diluted. So it start to become, vague. And it's not a solid one. It's not a concrete one. Rather, you understand it is not there is a real self available. Rather, because of the ignorance, because of avijja, so there is a mind-made self. Yeah. We can move forward.
Question number 2 of 6, that is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, in sitting or walking or on daily activities, I have heard we should allow things to happen and not deliberately make things happen. During my sitting practice, how can I distinguishly identify between things that happen naturally and things I make happen? For example, in the stillness, if a lot of thoughts come and I knowingly dwell on one, is this deliberate or natural? Much appreciate your advice and guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So actually, when a thought happens in the mind, so it may have some sort of an attractive nature, and so without our knowledge, we may get attracted. We may get pulled in. So then we are sort of involving in sort of thinking. So there we can't say it is kind of deliberate thinking, but we can say it is a kind of a habitual thinking. So actually we need to recognize this habitual thinking. So habitual thinking ultimately become kind of a proliferation, and we become sort of victim of this whole thinking process. But at the beginning, we might do some sort of deliberate thinking as well. Actually, it is very beautifully mentioned in the Madhupindika Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, where it is explained by Mahakacchana Mahathero, the Arahant Mahakacchana. So he mentioned that when the I and form are in line, so the I consciousness happens. So there's a knowing of the object. There's a knowing of the form. This is how the sight happens. So when that is there, because of the contact coming all these three together, so there's a feeling. Suppose you have seen your son, you have seen your husband, you have seen your wife, you have seen your daughter. So there's a pleasurable feeling. So now you recognize this. Okay, this is so and so. So there's this recognition. So as when the recognition is there, so now starts the thinking. So now you are thinking, oh, whether he has had his meals, whether he has done homework, or whether he has had, good sleep, or whether he had a kind of a quarrel with someone. So likewise, you start to think. Now that is kind of a deliberate thinking. So we actually involve there. So we are the ones initiating that thinking. But later what happens, now the habitual thinking start to intervene, and we think from this side, we think from that side, we think from the past, we thinking from the future, planning, daydreaming, fantasizing, with eyes, ears, nose, everything is now connected, and ultimately become, it's a huge mess. And it's a kind of an obsession now. And now it is not that we are deliberately thinking, rather the thinking machine has started and we become kind of a victim of that thinking. So therefore we can say, so the early, very early stages are common to even arahants. So they are a kind of causal reaction is there. Causal effects are there. On top of that, we start to think. That is deliberate thinking. And later, what happens is, we don't stop there. We don't apply brakes there. As a result, thinking is going on and on. Ultimately, it becomes kind of obsessive thinking. And then it is not, it's basically beyond our control. Now the proliferation is going on. So we become sort of a victim of that whole process. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, this is regarding a technique I use when the mind is not settled and getting distracted during my walking practice. Some days I find it difficult to focus on the sole of the foot and observe subtle and discontinuous sensations. During these times, it is much easier to focus on the walking process itself. Example, the way joints move in the lower legs and how the weight transfer as a continuous process. This seems to be more seamless than the noting technique of left and right. After some time, I can get back to the subtle spot observations. Even though this works for me, I don't know the validity of the technique. I'm trying to advise my children who practice with me and thought of checking with you before proposing them with this option to try. Much merits for your valuable advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So actually both aspects are there when it comes to mindfulness practice. So this minimalistic approach where you are trying to focus on one small aspect and recognizing that minute information is also there. On the other hand, if you have the kind of broader view and kind of a overview of the whole situation, that is also there. So you can change it. So you can have an overview, kind of broader mindfulness aspect. Sometimes we call it as macro mindfulness. And on the other hand, you can have the kind of minimalistic view, where the very refined, the finer details, very focused information. So that is also there. The kind of micro mindfulness is there. So you can use both aspects. So I mean, depending on the situation, you can switch between these two. So having the overview of the whole situation is one aspect of the mindfulness, and having very scrutinized detail is another aspect of mindfulness. And both of these categories are available. So therefore, both are valid ways of practice. And time to time, you can switch between these two. There is no harm.
Question number 4 of 7. This is on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing a few years under your guidance, and here is a short reflection of my recent sitting session. I do not have a specific object of mindfulness and try to observe whatever is prominent. Usually, it is the sitting posture or the small movements and vibrations in the body. Sometimes rising and falling of the abdomen, sometimes the breath. Even though I started strictly observing the breath and sticking with it for more than 2 to 3 years. I start focusing on the body, the observations around the posture and feeling the comfort of sitting. Then I go to observe one of the objects mentioned above. And after 4 to 5 minutes of continuous application of mindful observation, the sensations fade away, reaching to a much more relaxed, free state of mind. There are not much demarcations around the sensations at this stage, and some new phenomenon arises, as well as sleepiness, mind distractions to thoughts, single proliferation, streams of thought arising as coming through an open floodgate, etc. I have written several reflections on these, and I got valuable feedback from Bhante. There is no issue observing these new phenomena which are when they are present and count them under wider mindfulness awareness. From the body-based processes, observations to this all-in-one spacious mindful state, I haven't spent much time on feelings or thoughts during the last 3 to 4 years practice as a technique. Neither I have put specific attention to rising and disappearing nature of the objects which come into my radar. To vary my practice a bit, I was thinking of paying more attention to the feeling, the comfort, pain and neutral feeling observation, or pay more attention on the rising and disappearing nature of anything which comes by. Appreciate if Bhante can give some guidance and the technique for the next steps. Much merit for your valuable advice. With metta.
Yeah. Since you have recognize that you are capable now to understand the appearing and disappearing nature of anything, so applying that technique, I feel, is much fruitful. Actually, all these techniques are valid, and you can select a particular group of phenomena, and there you can understand the rising and passing away, appearance and disappearance. But without having that sort of a selected group, overall, whatever arising, so you are understanding, okay, they have the nature to arise and they have the nature to passing away. And you can actually refer, there is a beautiful sutta called Kinsukopama Sutta. So there are, Buddha mentioned this. So there are actually different people have used different approaches, have taken different approaches. Some have actually used to the bodily phenomena. Like you do Dhatu Manasikara, various element characteristics one have used, and they are trying to sort of generate wisdom through them. Some have used various faculties. So using that, they are trying to develop wisdom. Some have used the aggregates, skandha, and using that, they are trying to develop, wisdom. So certain others, actually, without having that sort of a discrimination, so whatever the condition phenomena, whenever either it could be feeling, it could be element characteristic, it could be a mental thought, mental state. So you can, so they actually have a kind of a broader perspective, and they are trying to recognize how these arising and passing away nature is common to all these conditioned phenomena. So that is, I mean, if you can move forward in that approach, so that is also welcome, no harm, and that is acceptable, and that is also is quite a fruitful and beneficial approach. So therefore, you can continue in that way. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7. This is related to number 7. Thank you for sharing your experience and practical tips to overcome the biggest problem of practicing mindfulness at the beginning, forgetting to be mindful. The method of using sticky notes to remind to be mindful seems quite effective at home. I have put small stickers in the mirrors and doors to remind me whenever I see them to be mindful of the activity I am doing at that point. Also want to check with Bande if there are any practical things we can do to be mindful in the office where we spend most of our day, at least 8 hours every day. Sticky notes seem not practical for this scenario. I can think of setting up a short vibration alarm in the phone every hour. I have heard that this is the same or one of the reasons to sound the gong every hour in temples of some Thai and Chinese tradition. Maybe a set of short reminders on Outlook calendar might work in my scenario. Thank you for your valuable insights and the guidance you provide.
Yeah, that's correct. So basically, I mean, it is not only I am describing or recommending, but even the, you know, actually recently I have to change my spectacles. So when I went there, so they actually advised me, don't look at the computer continuously. So with each 20 minutes, try to look at some far object and again come back to the screen. Again, after 20 minutes, you have to look at something far available, and then you have to look at far. So that is good for your eyes. So otherwise we end up with dry eyes because the computer screen is quite, you know, you are extremely concentrated there, and there are many attractive things, and maybe you are using a lot of brain power. So you, without your knowledge, so you loses the, you know, the blinking of the eyes. So therefore you strain your eyes. So therefore they advise even that. So on the other hand, so time to time earthing ourselves is most important. So I mean, continuously, if we are holding all these attachments, all these troubles, problems in our mind, so then the mind get really exhausted. So time to time we have to keep it aside. So that's a beautiful story from Ajahn Brahmavanso. So he is taking this kind of a cup. So he is asking to hold it for 2 hours without keeping it on the table. What do you think? So it becomes kind of a troublesome. I mean, it is not that heavy, but holding it for long time, say 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours continuously, start to aches your hand, then simply what you need to do is to keep it on the table and relax your hand. Maybe you can do little exercise and kind of a relaxation, stretching, and after a while again you can pick it back. Again you can now hold it. So as he mentioned, so it is similar to our day-to-day troubles, day-to-day problems, or day-to-day whatever the activities that we get involved with. So if we are trying to hold them in our mind for a long time, so it generates a lot of stress. It generates a lot of burden into the mind. So therefore, time to time, we have to put it aside and close our eyes and come back to the breath, come back to ourselves, come back to the, say, our body, to our posture. Because this incident or this scenario is extremely simple compared to the problem that you have in your hand. Say you are thinking about a situation at your office, so you have to plan something, you have to design something. It's a really mind consuming, brain consuming, resource consuming task. You get really fed up, you get strained. So assume that you simply switch off, or rather say sleep your laptop, your computer, and you simply close your eyes and you relax and spend 1 minute. So that's a very good practice, so that you can sort of energize yourself. You can break the cycle, the vicious cycle, and you can actually keep aside that, say, water cup, the big problem, and you can again rejuvenate yourself. So now you have, again you were able to regain energy, and you can have a fresh look to your problem. So therefore, as you have mentioned, so you can have such kind of a mechanism available in your Outlook or any other reminders for you to time to time informing you, okay, this is the time to relax. This is the time to let go. This is the time for a small break. So likewise, you are having time to time kind of small breaks, and at that time you are fully relaxing. You forget everything, completely let go of everything, and you fully enjoy that present moment. Just the direct experience, that very ordinary experience you are now trying to enjoy. Discarding all that conceptual thinking, intellectual thinking, so you stop yourself. Just come back to the direct experience. That is quite important. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7 is again related to the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Venerable Bhante, in the Dhamma talk today, the prince did not get a chance to see or hear or be with the princess. But Gartha says he was... But the Gartha says he was able to. You mentioned, Bhante, that seeing, hearing, smelling, etc. for the cause of love. I feel he did not
see the princess.
Yeah, he
didn't
get a chance to see
her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, that is the princess inferential knowledge. So you don't need to have all the experiences for you to explain it. So once he become the Paccheka Buddha, so now he's elaborating that all these possibilities are there. So he actually have heard about the passing away of the beautiful princess taken for him. But he didn't even, I don't know, I was not there in the scene to check whether whether he has really seen the dead body. Anyway, so he understood, I mean, through the hearing also you get the affection. Through the sight also one can get the affection. Okay, through the, say, sharing of certain things you get the affection. Okay, you get the direct touch. Through the direct touch, the bodily touch, also you one get the affection. And through the conversation also one get the affection. So these are in a way common sense, and it is understandable to everyone. So therefore he is giving a kind of a generalized approach to what has happened to him.
Bhante, we just come to 8 o'clock, but there's one more question. Is it okay if I...
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. So that's the last question. It's again on the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Bhante, when sorrow arises, is it wise to invoke the investigative and yoniso manasakara nature of the mind as highlighted in today's Dhamma Sermon? To do this type of wise reflection, isn't it necessary to have a pre-trained, well-developed mindfulness? Is this not questioning the ability of the Blessed One? But from our perspective, we will not be able to get into any type of reflection without pre-developed mindfulness. Miss Metta, say another question.
No, actually, that is true. I mean, when this kind of a tragedy happens to us, we may not be able to attain the Paccheka Buddhahood. That is true. But the point is, say, when this kind of thing happens, that in certain other suttas, Buddha mentioned that there are two possibilities. One possibility is that you start to think, you start to become sorrowful, you start to lament, and you trying to ask help from others, you become drunk. And all these things, likewise, that you become insane, you become crazy. So that is one approach that some people are taking. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned, suffering causes search, suffering causes investigation. So as you mentioned that you may not be able to immediately understand the causal relationship, immediately understand the Patisamuppada, because those are quite deep. But at least you start to recognize, you start to understand there's a problem in me. I mean, I am suffering. I need, how I am able to overcome this suffering? Now there's a question. Now there's a kind of an investigation. Self-quest is there. So with that urge, now you are going to someone else. Say, now you are asking, how are you going to help me? So assume that in today's terms that you are going to a counselor. So you are asking from another person, you approach another friend, or you are going to the temple, or you are asking from whoever it is that you believe that some solution can be given. So you approach that person. So this is the quest. So this is an investigation. So then assume that the other person is helping you, he is trying to convince you, he is trying to sort of generalize the problem. It is not only to you that I have also have faced this kind of situation, another person also have faced this kind of situation. So he is now trying to show the sort of inevitability of the problem, this kind of a situation. Now he is trying to convince you, help you, and to guide you in the removing of this sorrow, and now you are somewhat recovered, now you are getting to say mindfulness practice. It's a kind of a stepwise process. So therefore, in today's terms, in our situation, so this is the kind of a situation. So there are many cases. So after this kind of a say tragic accident or any kind of a say calamity, so people start to search. So what are the possibilities, other possibilities available? So how I can become happy? How I can overcome this sorrow? How I can overcome this lamentation? Rather than simply say continuously engulfed in this unhappiness, this sorrowful, pathetic situation, how I can overcome this sorrow? How I can again recover myself? So that is a positive approach. So it may not be immediately possible to investigate, as you said, the kind of what is the samuppada and all these deep dhamma, but slowly you may approach to some spiritual quest and to some other various ways and means to overcome that sorrow and lamentation, and so that would be the practical approach.
So I think we've come to the end of the program and finished all the questions, so I'd like to conclude the program. First, I'd like to thank Bhante for joining us and giving up his valuable time for this program every week. And especially to Nirupa for starting off and hosting the program today. Jatha is not with us, I had some questions. So, and also everyone who participated and put through the questions so that we can continue this program. So, I'd like to end the program and thank you for coming. Teruvan Saranai.
Sadhu. Yeah, Teruvan Saranai. Sukhi Hotu.